You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
Shop with cross service with Chigney's Nerd. Thug dreams making beats, cafes, boutiques, pink shirts, funny beards, phone apps, micro beers. Portland, Williamsburg, plant in Denver. Online dates in Denver, winter sports December. Women done up to turn up in the clubs on Lemma. Market and Blake, the only free riders the mall. 16th Street Martinis, Fashion Patrol. This is Denver. The city drinking.
Make some noise for your host, Bree Davey. Hey!
Thank you, everybody, for... I just saw my old roommates. Hi, guys, back there. I love this show for that reason. Thank you all for being here. So tonight, my inspiration for this show was to sort of take... I don't want to undermine the work that's already always being done by saying the midterms are over, what now? It's not a what now, it's a what else. And how can you support movements that have been happening for decades, in some cases, some that are newer, and be able to participate in a movement in a way that's supportive and also where you can learn yourself, because I think that's probably one of the biggest things that's helped me is like being open and vulnerable to understanding that I don't know jack shit and the people that have been doing this work for a really long time do. So that was the thought behind this, because I think sometimes midterms or whatever irrelevant, vote or not, this is not a vote shaming thing. That's not the purpose, but I think the focus sometimes is so much on that being the solution that we don't move beyond, you know, getting really excited to fill out our ballot or feeling motivated for a particular reason to fill out our ballot. It's like what happens next, what happened before, and what we can do in the future. So I brought three wonderful people up here that did some direct work with ballot initiatives and organizing this year in Denver in particular for our huge ballot. If you were here for the last show, we were like standing room only. People really wanted to participate. So I'm so excited to have a full room again, because to me that means that you guys give a shit beyond just, you know, we get it really easy in Denver. And if you can vote, which is a whole other, if you're allowed to participate in this kind of fucked up process, but you can do it through the mail. So what else can we do when we have to like put our bodies on the line and do work that's outside of something that can be pretty comfortable? So I would love to have each of you introduce yourselves and then speak just a little bit about what you do in this realm. It doesn't have to be super detailed. It can be, it's whatever you want to say in relation to in particular, sort of what you did around the midterms, and then we will talk about each of those things specifically. So,
My name is Jessica Zender. I am a part of Indivisible Denver. It's one of the newer groups, kind of the newly activated groups that has sprung up since 2016. And we did a lot of organizing around just getting feet on the ground for initiatives and for campaigns, both at the national level and at the local level, and just getting kind of people who had maybe never knocked on a door to knock on doors and to get engaged. So that was our role.
My name is Janae Donaldson. I am the founder of the Rocky Mountain Bus Riders Union. I did not expect that reaction. A former transit organizer for 9 to 5. The work that I did this midterm elections didn't just go around RTD board elections, but a lot of the work was the final pushes for an income-based bus pass and a youth pass discount that we were able to achieve and get and now have starting. Thank you. That's something to be proud of. In July, we will have an income-based bus pass, and in January, we now have a youth pass for children 6 to 18, I believe, to ride for 70% off the total fares. Yeah. So.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jamoke Emery. I was the creator of the 2016 Amendment T campaign, and alongside a coalition, I was co-chair of the Coalition to Abolish Slavery in 2018, and alongside a team, we ran the campaign, so woo-woo.
Thank you all for doing that work, and I think it's cool because we've seen the outcomes of that. Jamoke, I want to start with you just because the Abolish Slavery Amendment, it didn't pass the first time, which seems bizarre, but I know that you spoke about how this was, it was the way that it was written was confusing, and I think we've talked about this before on the show, but it's by design sometimes. All the time? Fuck it, all the time. So could you talk a little bit about that process and sort of how you made sure this time that it was as clear as you could make it?
Yeah, we definitely learned a lot from that first process. I think like in 2016, we thought we were like really doing the heavy lift and talking to legislators and getting it passed through the House and through the state Senate, and not realizing that the Blue Book process was involved.
And if anybody tried to read the Blue Book, that's like before you get your ballot, you get this Blue Book, and it's really confusing, like really confusing.
Yeah, so in order to get like the correct wording in the Blue Book, you have to go through several readings and in several committee hearings, and we weren't quite aware of that process the first time. So going through it the second time, we made sure that we had a specific committee for that language to make sure that the ballot language that went on, because we really identified that as the largest problem, like the largest hurdle, and hoped that if folks understood what they were voting for and against, that Coloradans wouldn't vote for slavery in the Constitution.
That's awesome. That's good. And it speaks to just how many different angles you have to approach this. It's not just get something on the ballot and tell everybody to vote for it or against it.
Yeah, not that easy.
Yeah, right. Janae, I know that pre-elections, this was the first time I was aware that voting for the RTD board was important. So, and that was solely based on what you taught me. So thank you so much for doing that. Just you're relentless in getting that information out. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about pre the election. I know that you had folks organized to call on a specific day and go to meetings. Can you just talk about how that came to be, or how you came about that as your process?
So the RTD board is a nonpartisan election. So there aren't any Democratic or Republican. You know, where no one's declaring anything. So it's easier to get people behind that when you start to look at what they're able and what they voted for, what they voted against, what board members are on board for keeping bus services, which ones aren't. And all of that is there within their meeting notes. So you can take a tally and be like, so this person here voted this way for this policy. I can go and target them because they've got a phone number that's listed there. They've got an email that's listed there. They are, you know, they're accessible human beings, and they should be accessible human beings because they're the ones that are in charge of your bus service. What a lot of my work for folks, because it really is hard to go to these RTD meetings because they're there on Tuesdays, they are on times where people are going to be working or at school, is to get them more engaged by calling them and by emailing and by being in their face that way, because they have to be accountable to these folks. So there was a We Call Wednesday, and there still is We Call Wednesdays. You are welcome to call the board at any point in time and talk to them about the issues that they're facing. However, it kind of sucks for them too, like in a way, because they have to actually answer those phone calls, and it will get to a certain point, people can just be calling and be like, yay, yo, like the number 12 didn't show up for an hour, and they're just like, well, I don't know what to do about that, and like, I don't know who to call about that. So those calls can kind of get like a little bit mushy within like the call campaign itself, but I do feel that because their information is listed there, then they should be contacted because bus riders and bus drivers, or bus riders in particular, don't have a face to go to when it comes down. They are the face of RTD, so they should be serving the riders. So.
And Jessica, since Indivisible Denver is sort of an an organization that would probably look at many things. Was there anything in particular that you yourself focused on, or if the group focused on, and what was your approach and why did you choose to do that?
So our members, everyone kind of went, they found the candidate or the issue that lit them on fire, and they did that. I personally focused most of my energy on two races, and I think of it as kind of defense and offense. Like, I was like, we have to flip the house, we have to get rid of Mike Kaufman, and so I knocked on a lot of doors for Jason Crow, and that to me was just like, you know, that's just defense, that's just trying to right this ship while we still have time to do that. But the other thing, the race that had my heart was an RTD race, and I worked countless hours for Chantel Lewis because she won. Because to me, that is the future. That's where we need to pivot to. She was someone who was clearly, she was running because she was running for her community. She was a bus rider. She had focused on equity in her career and in her life. She wasn't using the seat as a jumping off point for a political career. And I was like, this woman is the future, and candidates like her are the future. And what I have learned the most the past couple of years is that if we are going to be successful in this representative democracy model, the democracy really needs to actually reflect the population, and it is not doing that now. And yeah, so I put most... I started out as one of those people who was like calling Cory Gardner every day, which I still do, and I hope you guys do.
It's a good entry point. You know, and put him on your speed dial.
And ended up working on like one of the most hyper local races you can work on, which is an RTD race, and I found it so fulfilling and so important. And I really encourage everybody to do the same thing. So yeah.
Cool. So now it's funny. It feels like when you're doing this kind of work that's directly community related, it's like the day after the election is a million miles away. It's like every day is this, you know what I mean? It's not like, now what's next? It's like, what else? So I don't know, Janae, maybe do you want to start by just talking about what did you do sort of like after that, after the it's done, right? We've got some people in those board seats that you advocated for, some that you did not think were that great. What was the next sort of step, or where did you go after that?
I went home and I cried a little bit. One of the people that I did campaign for, Julia Stewart, did not win. Here's the thing. I feel that the board elections are super important, but organizing outside of the RTD board is gonna be the most important part. So I started doing research. I went kind of gonzo a couple weeks ago and just started going through RTD meeting notes again and just kind of seeing where their projections are going to be going for the next couple years. But what I really want us to start focusing on for the next couple of like 10 years is really focusing on how our elimination of stops and routes and service cuts are actually projecting and creating more of a problem than we know. Like, the more we cut down these stops, the more we cut down these routes, the less service that people are getting. And we're talking about rail as if it's like this big, booming, like, you know,
light rail
in general, or the trolley. Like, these types of fixed routes don't get into neighborhoods that actually need services. So it doesn't make sense to continue to build out a rail system when we do not have bus systems that can get people to said rail. One, like, think about it. It's science. Like, if I continue to cut at a bus system and then continue to build out rail, who am I building rail for? It's not for the bus riders. It's for people with cars. And this is where a lot of the spending has gone for RTD. They are a billion-dollar corporation, and they're consistently talking about how broke they are. So what I want people to start focusing on is not the actual elections, because RTD has got a culture that is not going to shift. you've got great people that are going to be in these board seats, but you still have an issue of the staff, and the staff are the ones pulling the strings. So what we need is a look at how they can start to make money outside of cutting routes and cutting stops and reducing services. And what we can start looking at are ballot measures, or we can start looking at bills, or we can start looking at charging for parking, which is still like a state, we will still have to go through a state Senate office in order for us to do it, but it's still possible. And because we have flipped,
No, it's okay. I just want to clarify. So you're talking about you, in order, if you want to drive to the light rail, for instance, you don't have to pay to park there.
Nope.
Okay.
So you don't have to pay to park at the light rail stations. And if I'm driving and I can drive to a light rail station, then that means I can pay to park. Like, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to cater to car drivers for a public transit system, especially when the public transit system is run by us. Everything that we buy here today, anything that you buy here tomorrow, anything you buy outside of this place, is going to have a kickback to RTD, which means they get a certain percentage of that sales tax. Sales tax is regressive, which means poor folks pay the most into it. And then on top of that, they're the ones that are using that transit system. So that means they are paying more into RTD than anybody else, and they're the ones that are getting the least amount of service.
And we're catering sort of to the luxury of choice folks who can drive to the public transportation.
So pay attention to ballot measures. Pay attention to other bills, because it's not going to come from them. I can guarantee you that. It's going to come from us, and we have to, and we have to start really using the power of the Senate and House that we now have, because we did flip that shit. So, like, there are people within those seats that are willing to hear these types of these types of changes. And I can talk about what those are later.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jamoke, can you talk a little bit about how the amendment and your work on the amendment fits into a larger picture of the work that you do?
Yeah. For me, in 2014, I was a founding member of the local Black Lives Matter chapter, and doing work directly confronting police brutality. And my analysis started to evolve around, like, police brutality really being a bit of an oxymoron. Like, it's hard for me to feel like police can, I mean, not police brutality, excuse me, police accountability. Police accountability being a bit of an oxymoron, because it's hard for me to imagine holding police accountable for their actions when the police are just a tool, right? And the police can no more be accountable for their actions than a hammer can be accountable for its actions, right? I'm not interested in building like a better, more streamlined hammer or a nicer, more humane slave catcher, right? And like. And that's
a hammer with a camera on it that's sometimes on and right, sometimes like off.
Right?
Look what the hammer does.
Yeah, look at it.
And from that analysis really came, like, so why not just end slavery? Like, if we fundamentally change the system of incarceration, if we fundamentally change slavery at its base and at its core, then slave catching necessarily has to look different and cannot exist the way it exists. If we change that, then police accountability doesn't have to be an issue because it no longer exists
in the same way.
Sure. So for me, like, that is part of the larger framework. Mm-hmm. Is like we jumped into a fight dealing with a symptom that was directly affecting us, and the analysis has to deepen in order for us to change that.
Sure. And that's helpful for me to think about it in that way, because of course it's like, well, no, duh, abolish slavery in the Constitution, but what does that mean for our everyday lives in this place that we're in right now? And I think the Black Lives Matter movement has done incredible work, but this to me almost reached people that didn't have to listen, mm-hmm. in you know, for privilege or for other reasons. So can you talk, Jessica, can you talk a little bit about, I feel like organizing as white folks in this time frame it's not hard, it's frustrating, but it is not difficult. Can you talk about sort of from that perspective, what your approach is? How do you talk to other white people about issues that we seemingly don't have to think about.
So the group that I am active in, many of them were, including myself, were pretty new to the idea of activism or organizing. We were activated by the 2016 election and realized pretty early on that we were very late to the party, to our own shame, and that that was a function of our comfort and privilege. And we have done a lot of education in Indivisible as much as we can, and continue to do. We do a lot of education about dismantling white supremacy and our privilege. And we started out with this kind of, it was, let's start showing up for other people. Like, let's show up for what other people need. And I think that was a good-hearted and well-intentioned opening door. And I think at this point we are trying to expand that even more, that it's got to be more than just showing up where other people need you, and to really start doing that. It's kind of like what you were speaking to about dismantling the core of it. Stop just focusing on the symptoms. And so for a lot of the people in our group, which is overwhelmingly white middle-class people, it's really doing some soul-searching and some
looking at your shit.
Looking at your shit. Had a lot of hard conversations, a lot of feisty Facebook posts.
A lot of well actually's.
Yeah, a lot of well actually's. Or yes, a lot of talk about intent versus impact. Yes, but one of the things that I try to tell people as I'm talking about, you know, we're gonna make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. It's embarrassing. It's shameful when it happens, and you know, you just gotta kind of push through. But something that I think white people don't always say is that it is hard and it is embarrassing to mess up and to put your foot in your mouth and to cause harm to people. And we do the work because it's what we should do. But also, my life is so much richer now than it has ever been. The relationships that I'm allowed to have, the spaces I'm allowed to be in, my view of the world is just so expanded. And I think sometimes that's a piece of the conversation that white people don't always hear. Like, they hear the, you know, you're going to mess up, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to hurt people, and you need to make amends for that. And all that stuff is true, and that's the most important. But I do wish sometimes people would realize, like, and your life is also going to get bigger because of it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the message that we've been pushing and trying to craft. And also, you know, we rely very much on our accountability partners, and you know, we do not organize in a vacuum, for sure.
Sure.
Yeah. I want to expand just a little bit on that. Racism doesn't work for white folks either. You know that, right?
Right.
Like, that's not good for your overall body health. Like, that shit breaks bones and hearts and livers, and it doesn't feel good to be racist. I can only imagine what it's like just to wake up and hate someone for no fucking reason, other than the fact that someone told you. Like, it's been proven that what you, like, that your body is water, and like the things that you like hate and vehemently can't freaking stand ends up sticking into you. Like it's a virus. Like, so, like, just remember that shit. Like, that doesn't look good on y'all. Like, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to receive it. My God. Like, it also gives, like, it also gives heart attacks to us too. But like, on some real shit, like, that dude who got punched in the face, like, after calling like a UPS driver the N-word and then just dies, like, he ain't right. Like, his body is hurt. Like, not, it wasn't just the punch. It had a lot to do with his own physical body ain't being right because he hated somebody for the color of the skin. That's science facts, so.
Thank you. Science facts.
You can thank Bianca for that one.
Yeah. So now, I guess this is where I would love to hear from you all. If you were speaking to somebody today about the work that you do and they said, how can I help? What is something that you would tell people, anybody that's like, I want to care, I want to help you with RTD stuff. You know what I mean? I want to work more to dismantle the police state. Like, what are things that people, what do you feel like is like most important or something that can be done now, or I don't know.
I can say learn to lobby all of your senators. That's not a game. If you think voting was fun, show up to the Capitol. Show up to the Capitol with a slip of paper with me. I'd love to go with you. I love going up there. And just hand them a slip of paper, and like, they have to talk to you. So your concerns outside of the ballot can still be there in that political realm. It's not an impossible thing to do. No one like tells you you can't do it at the front door. And a lot of folks don't know this, that like it happens twice within a day during like legislative sessions. So you've got like morning sessions and you have afternoon sessions. You have like, if there's a bill that you can see like on the Colorado Senate, State Senate website, which is easy to look up, you can like learn to lobby. Y'all, it's easy. It's really, really easy to just go up there, hand them a slip and paper, be like, I want to talk to you. I'm a private citizen, and there are issues within my community. That's a really easy thing to do. And that's one area.
So you go to the website, you follow like during, you find out when the legislative session is, you see like.
Yep, so there's, so if you look at the Colorado State Gov website, there are times and bills that are going to be introduced during a certain part of the House. So if you're looking for a transportation bill, go to the transportation area of that of the Colorado State Senate website. They'll have a list of bills that are going down. You can see the time in which they're going to be introduced to the House. But before all that, you can go and talk to your senator and be like, I support this bill or I don't support this bill for these reasons, and how it's going to mess up my household or how it's going to make my household better. That's how you can be better representatives of your community outside of the ballot. Like, start going up to the, because they're not expecting that shit at all. They're not.
Surprise.
They're really not. You know who they're
here to lobby your ass.
Exactly. You know, they're expecting.
You have been lobbied.
They're expecting big pharma. They're expecting big
the
oil.
Sure, paid people.
Exactly.
Right.
Because those people, those get paid. Those folks get paid to lobby. And you've got very few folks that are actually working for nonprofits. There's only two that I know of. So like, but there's $1 billion to be washed out, like with big oil and everybody else. They're expecting them. They're not expecting you to show up. So show up. Just show up. Next, the legislative session starts in February of next year. Like, just go.
January 4th.
January 4th. There you go. Sorry. I've been out the loop.
But yeah. I'm in love with those words, outside the ballot. Mm-hmm. I think we've been told this lie about civic engagement and that voting is the only civic engagement, and it's just really not. I think it's just simple. It's a tactic that we can use to be civic engaged. But you know, for me, like, that's a tactic that I chose to use. Like, we chose to use this time, getting Amendment A passed, because we saw it as like being effective. But there are so many other ways to be civically engaged that have nothing to do with the ballot. Whether that is, you know, going up and, you know, to Capitol, talking to your legislators. But I think it all boils down to disruption. It's like, how do we find out what the rules are so that we can break them? Because oftentimes the rules are meant to oppress us, to oppress our people, and to hold us down. And when we think of these rules and we think of these laws and this legislation as like the weather, like tomorrow it's going to rain and there's nothing I can do but bring a coat. Except like climate change. Like, I'm sorry. What was I talking about? Anyway, nah,
be the climate change is what you're saying.
But my point being is like legislation and the political climate, there's that word again. The political climate is not like the weather. Like, we can change that on a daily basis. It's actually up to us to decide to disrupt those systems, whether it is finding the strings, finding the knots, finding the places to pull at that, whether it's, you know, interrupting traffic, because like what the rules say is like people should be able to get from work and ignore all the problems out in the streets, or the rules say that like only this amount of a population are going to vote, or the rules say that like lobbying has to be done by paid professionals because it's inaccessible for the rest of us who have 9-to-5s. All of those kind of boil down to disruption. How do we break those? And so for me, like that would be my like, what do we do next? It's like regardless of what your issue is, whether it's RTD or mass incarceration or getting Dems elected, how do we disrupt those systems? Finding what the rules are, how they're written, how they were put up there, so that we can break them.
I was just going to talk about polls, actually. And also polls. So in learning about how legislation sometimes gets to be, organizations who have money to do polls will pay. This blew my mind as a person that made $11,000 a year as a journalist, that they pay $35,000 to a firm to conduct a poll to say, hey, this thing is important enough to put on the ballot or get to the point where we put it on the ballot. When they do those polls, it's often by landline. So we know who's got a landline still. It's by not just registered voters, who has voted like in the last three elections. So it's overwhelmingly going to skew towards upper middle class white people are making these decisions before we even get the chance to make the decision when it's on the ballot. So I think that, yeah, and just polls in general are kind of, yeah. I see what you're saying. Because someone can say like, okay, well, it's already happening, so I don't. What's the point in participating? Is what you're saying? If they're like, supervised injection's not going to make it, so who cares? Which it did. So. Sure. Sure. Well, do your own research too, right? Like, don't look at a poll on whatever CNN. But yeah, there's all these systems in place to get to that point, and so I absolutely agree with you, Jamoki, that it's more about like in the moment, in the day, every day, what can you do to change the conversation, make it uncomfortable as fuck? Like, do you know what I mean? Call it out, say it, you know. And I think we're seeing. It's hard because media chooses what we see in terms of coverage, and I think about that a lot with Black Lives Matter's coverage, and then it tapers off, and it tapers off, and it tapers off. And then the narrative around that anyway, like, why are you stopping the highway? Because this is how we have to get you to pay attention, that this is fundamentally fucked up shit is happening to people. So, yeah, I agree with you. Jessica, did you want to add anything?
Well, I was going to say many of us knocked on a lot of doors or donated money or made phone calls so that the people at the state capitol would have those jobs. And that is our house. That's our house. We made that happen. And so you can walk around that house anytime you want, and you can talk to those people that you got elected. They work for you. And we actually have lobbying training days. We do one each month. So there will be one on January 16th, February 20th, March 20th, and April 17th, where we will train you how to lobby and how to show up, because there is tons of money walking around those hallways. And there are polls, but there's no poll as powerful as a bunch of people who show up and say, I got you elected, I can get you unelected, here's what's important to me. And there are going to be a lot of issues this year that are gonna come up about transportation, about bail reform, about pretrial, how we treat people who have been arrested and are facing trial. And the people who are invested in things staying the same have a lot of money, but At this level, at the state level, they aren't used to us showing up. And us showing up makes a huge difference. So I just want to echo exactly what my co-panelists have said. Show up. Show up and disrupt, because they don't. They're married to a way things used to be, and they don't know kind of the sleeping giant that is erupting. So, yeah.
And to the, I'm thinking about current things that have happened in the last week. And so in Denver, our city council okayed 12-1 supervised injection facilities, which is incredible, which means that folks who inject drugs can go to a space that is clean and sterile and safe, and they can use drugs there. There's so much misinformation out there about supervised use. It's mind-boggling, but the biggest thing is shame and stigma. And as Lisa, who's the executive director of Harm Reduction Action Center, has said many times, she was on this show a couple of months ago, if shame and stigma worked, and incarceration worked, we can't arrest our way out of the war on people who use drugs. So, people showed up, and people called, and people emailed our city council. Our city council is people, those are like, if we're looking at this like institution of who works for us, that's like the closest locally who is working for us, and it worked. What's gonna happen after that, we're not sure, but it was incredible for me to see, as a person who has family members and close friends who use injection drugs, to know that they could have this space potentially to stay alive, because you can't get a dead person to rehab, like you can't. So that to me was just like a really incredible thing to watch in a city where it's currently illegal to be without a home. It's so confusing because Albus Brooks is super into supervised use sites, but he doesn't see the correlation to our population experiencing homelessness. But anyway, that's a big thing that's coming up in May. I know, I could just go on and on. But in May here in Denver, we have another huge election. May is a super weird time, again, by design. Who's thinking about the people that are going to be, running our city, doing things for us. So we have a mayoral election. We have all of our city council seats up. There's 57 candidates currently for all of those positions. So that's a lot of folks are gunning for these positions. And it's really up to us to find out what they're all about, if they give a shit about the things that we give a shit about, if they see the same issues that we're seeing, if they're living them. I think that you two spoke about Chantel being a direct a person in her community that gives a shit about her community. So she wants to work for her community versus what often happens, which is, RTD is a great stepping stone to look like I want to get into pop. Did you want to go, Janae?
No, it's not. No, it isn't. There is no evidence that says that RTD elections are a stepping stone to any fuck all House or Senate. Any of that. It's not. Nobody's ever done that. So it doesn't make sense. Like, there's like 0%, and people do that.
Yeah.
People go into RTD board elections thinking that they're going to be president next year. And like, that's, or they're going to, at the very least, be a city council member. There's only one person that I know of that has gone into a city council seat, and her name was Tina Francone, and she was a monster. So there's no evidence supporting that. There is no evidence supporting that. So the people who are going into RTD have these ideas, or like some people that are going into RTD have these grand ideas of becoming city council afterwards. That's not how that works. In fact, if you look at the way the election, like, it just doesn't make sense. So like, it doesn't even like correlate time-wise. So like, it's really silly. But you have a lot of folks that think that, and they start running for RTD board because they're charismatic, you know, or whatever, and they've got like these great ideas for other areas of office, but they don't know anything about RTD.
I was gonna say, what do you ask people who are running? What bus do you ride?
Here's the things that you need to ask. What bus do you ride? Do you know what redlining is? And do you know what redlining looks like through transit? And if they can't answer those three questions, which we can talk about if we want to, then they don't get to be RTD board. So that's just how that they shouldn't be RTD board, because redlining is happening through public transit. So if you don't know what that means, then I don't think that you deserve that seat. And that's like, that's just, you know, what it is. And also, like, just run for city council if you want to. Just wait for that. Yeah. Yeah. Like, or just run for city council if that's what you want to do. But RTD is not a stepping stone. That place is a hole. Like, that is not a stepping stone. You have
I want
to
you to
dedicated.
Be in charge of that hole, though, Janae. I want you to run it.
I want the Rocky Mountain Bus Riders Union to be in charge of it. And that we can't do that unless we're outside of it.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. That pressure and that work that we can do from the outside is just as crucial, if not more, than what is happening from the inside out. She's making us face our shit. So in May we have this huge election, and one of the things that's on that is the right to rest, which has been petitioned, and it's ready. It's going to be on the ballot, and that is to sort of counteract and undo everything that the urban camping ban has done, which has made it illegal to be in public spaces. It's this really bizarre policing of who can be where, when. I was just tweeting furiously like a crazy person because there's a whiskey company that's releasing their special snowflake whiskey on Saturday. I know, I want to say I'm making this up, but I am not. And people are camped outside of their building in tents on Kalamath, and I drive Kalamath every day, and I'm like, isn't that fucking fascinating? There's no police over there kicking your tent, telling you to move along, throwing your belongings in the trash. That is a real thing. If you want to Google it, Denver police, there is news footage of police officers throwing people's belongings in the garbage. And can you imagine someone coming into that space that you call home and taking your stuff and putting it in the garbage? That's what is happening. So to see this sort of, well, capitalism makes it okay if you want to camp out, but yeah, Black Friday, I mean, we have a long history of something called SNIA grab. If you've been in Colorado long enough, we don't have GARTS Sports anymore, which became Sports Authority. Sneagrab, it doesn't even, it's GARTS. Sneagrab is bargain spelled backwards, yeah. Just so you know. But people camped out for days. I know, did I just blow your mind? Bargain. You can camp out for a bargain, but you can't camp out to live. So I think for those of us that are housed or in secure housing, I think it's really important that we look at something like this is a great example of the classism that's happening in the city right now. When we look at a housing, this is not about housing affordability, this is about the right to housing. And I want to try to reframe that conversation, but something that we can do is vote for the right to rest in May. You can help the campaign. You can go to Denver Homeless Out Loud. They're prolific in keeping people up to date on what they're doing. You can support them. And to me, that as a housed person, it is one of the most crucial things that you can do right now to directly impact your fellow community members in the city who are not seeing the same benefits from the growth that other folks are seeing. So, so we have an election in May. Please watch out for it. There's people running for mayor. There's a person over here. Hey, when you're done posing, actually, Kaylin, would you mind, can you just talk a little bit, thank you, Jamoki. I know, I'm gonna put you on the spot. But I wanna kinda go off with what we were talking about with disruption and how you and your fellow members of ADAPT took over Cory Gardner's office and refused to leave. Can you just talk about how that came to be and what the purpose was and what you saw as a result?
Yeah. I'm not as loud as you. We sat inside of the senator's office for 90 hours. And just were like, we're not leaving. And unless you tell us you're not gonna vote for a cut to Medicaid because we're all people that are impacted firsthand by cuts to Medicaid. And it was a pretty small group of disabled women. It was 9 of us. It started with 8, and then somebody carried a guy named Lonnie up the stairwell. So we had 9 of us, and you know, it was just like a civil disobedience that got started getting like national attention and started really putting some serious pressure outside of the lobbying and outside of the phone calls, because Cory Gardner never answers his phone.
He does not.
And we were in his office and we just heard it like all night. And we're like, keep calling, I guess. And we just disrupted, and we got the cops called on us every time they asked me to rap, and they wouldn't let us use the bathroom, and so we're like, okay, well then we're gonna do it here. And then they let us in after it was, you know, a day in. They're like, it's gonna get real shitty.
Literally, was, yeah, very, very shitty.
I've always been into disruption. Just last week, and I'm glad to be here, is my band played inside of the prison, and I got to share that story, and I'm like side-eyeing the warden like, is he going to kick me out? I don't know. You know, but I have like a pretty cool privilege of saying a lot of shit and not being... what's the word? I don't know. I just have like, I'm not, what's the word I'm looking for? People aren't afraid of me because I'm in a wheelchair, but
sure.
Like, actually it gives me an opportunity. Huh? I'm not threatening. I'm not as threatening. Like if you were there saying the same exact thing.
How would people?
You know, I mean, even my drummer, who's, you know, an able-bodied white guy, you know, like, he couldn't get away with saying...
He got kicked out of a bar last night because he called out racism.
Because he wasn't
was awesome.
With me, you right. know? I could have said that and probably, like, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
They did finally arrest us. But it took a lot of effort, and it was, like, a really cool example, you know, and I've been... disrupting for a really long time, and in bigger movements like Black Lives Matter, like Occupy, like being
Standing
at Standing
Rock,
Rock mm-hmm. and stuff, and it was really cool to like remind myself that like a small group of people can really fuck shit up if it's like at the right time and with the right purpose, and it was awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Well, and I think it proves that, like, organization doesn't have to be this huge, there doesn't have to be this massive, months-long planning, you know. It can happen in a moment when it needs to if you've got people ready to back you up or to show up for you or show up for, you know, for whatever it is. Because that was directly related to the Medicaid situation. Cool. Okay. Well, I would love to open it up if anybody has questions for this amazing panel who's doing work every day. I think we heard from all of you that like it's not as hard as it's made to seem, right? It's not just like I have to learn everything that's on the ballot and then check that box and then I just did it. It's like finding organizations. Actually, you know what? That would be really helpful. If there's organizations or places online or places people can go to find out more information that where they could be the most effective, can each of you maybe talk about your individual groups or whatever you would like to direct people towards?
So I am a part of Indivisible Denver. We do have a website that's indivisibledenver.club, C-L-U-B. And then we do a lot of organizing on Facebook, which I know, but we do it on Facebook. And there's two Indivisible Denver Facebook groups, and we are Indivisible Denver CD1. That's us.
There was a schism.
Yeah, there's a schism. And we're all, and on Twitter. So that's where you can find us.
Thank you.
So the Rocky Mountain Bus Riders Union is got a Facebook group page, and that is where that lives. However, I am finding ways to become independent of, well, I'm finding ways to fund it. So that's what's going on here with that. However, there are few places that I like to kind of give shout outs to where I get a good amount of my information from is a website called Good Jobs First. And they have a side website called Gatsby 77. And what Gatsby 77 is a website where you can track how many tax subsidies our state has given away. And we are at $1.6 billion of tax subsidies, and a lot of them have gone towards development companies. So these types of things, just get real nerdy with your research, because then you can just like spit facts like and be able to like really come with like with hard numbers. I am still very much in support of 9to5, the work that they're doing with the Denver Meadows Mobile Home Park. Please look that up. This is something that is really, really important. Like, what we're doing with mobile homes and how we're erasing mobile homes is really, really paramount to start looking at, because this like one of the last bastions of people trying to just keep their land because they bought that. So definitely look at the Denver Meadows Mobile Home Park. Definitely check out 9to5. And I'm freelancing it right now. So if you got jobs, bring
hire
it to me.
Janae.
I do good research. So.
She does really good. nothing. She fucks shit up and does research.
That's what I do.
And feed you. Oh yeah, she cooks for us.
I'm also serving at our. Chef.
You should be. She's a chef. Everything. Jamoki is.
What? I guess I'm up. Check out.
It's you.
Check out Abolish Slavery Colorado on Facebook, abolishslaveryco.org. The Abolish Slavery Colorado Coalition is still kicking because we got a whole lot of work to do. There are 21 other states that have slavery in their state constitution, so we will be soon to be the first of many. This is just the first part of a long dream. So we got work to do. Come check us out. Come join the coalition. Let's get Janae paid to do something. Because we don't do this work for the paycheck. We get the paycheck to do the work.
Yeah. I would do this for free, but rent's not.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you guys so much. Yeah. Thank you so much. We have a couple minutes. Did you?
Especially hitting on that last note. I guess my question to the panelists is considering like the amount of financial oppression, the amount of gentrification, and the amount of like people of color that have been decimated out of their businesses and out of their homes. This is something that I've been personally kind of slowly becoming aware of, because I've been a community activist for about 5 years, more in like the grassroots, you know, more of like mobilizing people. But I've been really, especially as of late, downtrodden with how much economics plays into it, as much as I fucking hate like how much it plays into it. I guess I just want to ask if how much are we investing into like economic revitalization of impoverished neighborhoods, of like how much, what is the awareness of that around here? I've been seeing it happening in Native communities up north, like in Standing Rock. I feel like that's something that we direly need to be paying attention to, because we could organize so many people, but everybody is like on that last leg. And if like they don't, like, you know what I mean? If they miss that paycheck, like they're gone. The organizer's gone, you know what I mean? Or community members are gone. And it's just, you know, it's just terrifying to me, you know?
Thank you for that. That's a tough question, and it's something that I think that we're all, again, as a housed person, I think about that a lot. Something very simple that we can do is support Black and Brown businesses in many ways. It's hard. Gentrification is this like seemingly invisible force that is wrecking human beings. But I don't know if you all have any recommendations on ways that we can work on the financial side of it.
I've got a couple.
Great.
I think that we should start looking, like I told you, like the website that has all those tax subsidies, they all have names and faces, and they've all got an address. So, and we know how much they're getting, right? So we've got to figure out ways to either take that money back from them and put that into the community. Or, in my opinion, we need to start looking at what grants for land grabs is going to start looking like. And I know that sounds just like, oh, go off the grid, like get real guerrilla with it. But that's, so? So? Like, no, this is how you build something outside of the system that, like, doesn't have to be a part of whatever this is. Like, I think that it's totally possible for us to start, y'all need to start reading Octavia Butler. This is a real thing that we need to start looking like what it's going to look like, especially when climate change starts to hit the way it is, because California on fire is going to be Colorado on fire, is going to be Texas on fire, going to be everything's on fire. So what do we do in order to get real, real separate from the actual state? Because I don't believe in actually thinking that all of Master's tools is gonna get rid of Master's house, because the fire is coming in a lot of different ways. So either we figure out what it's gonna look like to completely divest and like look, you know, like really start looking like what it's gonna be to like take some land and we put our people here and we start building here on that way. Or we need, like, I mean, do both. We need to start looking at what it's gonna be like to take their money back, but we also need to start looking at what it's gonna look like when it's time for us to buy a couple acres.
And right now in Denver, the GES Coalition, the Global Area Swansea Coalition, is working on land trust models. And they just, I think it was tonight or last Tuesday, they had a event to teach people about land trust. So I would check into them just as a community way to try to, it's difficult to compete against land wealth that's been generationally passed on and is taken over during downtime when people that should be able to live and own it are getting it taken away. And then, you know, it's what's happening to Denver for sure. Yeah. Oh, that I don't know how to face. I mean, I think we're kind of dealing with it every day. It's part of the thing, though, is like white supremacy is already violent, and that's how it functions. Right.
Yeah. I think we've all been experiencing that type of violence for a long, long time.
We're going to be all right.
I'm going to be all right.
Today's the anniversary of the Sand Creek Massacre, so. The Proud Boys, yeah.
Yeah, that's one example of like they will snitch on each other so fucking hard.
You know,
I am.
That's not how we're gonna do.
Yeah, it's not a real community. That's a great point. It's based on really fucked up shit. Anybody else? Questions? No. Yeah. Okay. So your question is, now that slavery's been removed from the Constitution here in Colorado, what does that mean for us?
I think that's it's a great big wide open, isn't it? Right? Like, I think like that is the question that we get to have. That's the conversation that we get to have, one, as citizens, but also like for folks who are currently incarcerated and formerly incarcerated, to have among themselves. Like, what does it mean to no longer be a slave of the state? Does it mean that, like, if I'm a citizen and I have the rights thereof, do I get to vote? Does that mean that, like, I'm not going to say all the things that it could mean, because we've still got work to do and I don't want to telegraph anything. but I think that part of the reason why the analysis was, like, let's go at the Constitution, because, like, the Constitution just isn't a symbolic document the way the Declaration of Independence is. Like, the Constitution sits as the basis of all the law, of all the statute. Any statute or any law that gets written up has to measure up against that document. Once we clarify that folks are no longer slaves, then yeah, we have to have that conversation about what does that mean in this state when we can't treat folks that way, right? And that's a conversation that I think we can have, like, not just at the dinner table, but we can have in the courts, that we can have at the legislature, that we can have in the streets.
Yeah.
But that's a question that I would say like shouldn't go necessarily to someone like myself, who like although I've spent time in jail, I haven't been to prison, right? We should be having those conversations, asking those questions of folks who are both currently and formerly incarcerated doing long time, right? Not that there's a cutoff, right? Because like I read something recently, right? The average American commits 3 felonies a day. Just
what?
The average American, like because of you know, the way the legal system is set up and the way like the laws are written, like the average American commits 3. Just walking out of your house, going about your business, you probably did 3, some of us 4, 5, 6, right? So what does that mean for someone like myself or someone like Janae, who statistically we're gonna have more police contact than the rest of y'all?
Yeah.
Any one of those 3 could put me away for 5 to 10. So for me, like there is no real cutoff. Like is it like because I spent you know a day in jail or a weekend in jail, a year in jail, or 3 years in prison, 5 years in prison, right? Like this could affect all of us, and like it's something that we have to go at. So it's a conversation that we should all be having, but starting from folks who are most directly impacted.
And thinking about what you think is criminal, I think is really crucial to me. Like, it's really interesting when we talk about like breaking laws. Well, who are those laws instituted to oppress or supposedly keep safe? I mean, I think about, you know, selling drugs. I don't know a person that hasn't sold drugs, but it's like, I know a lot of drug dealers that are my friends. I mean, we could talk about this.
Don't nobody tell on yourselves right now.
No, don't do that here. But I'm just saying, like, especially when we look at a state where my friend Justine Sandoval, who's been on the show before, talked about this, like, people move to Colorado sometimes for legal weed, right? Well, how did we get legal weed, and what does legal weed look like? Well, it was a lot of organizing, A, but B, what about the people that were selling weed before it was legal? So it's kind of like thinking about the things that we think are wrong or are right is a great place to start questioning your own thought process around criminal activity, I think is really important, because fucked up shit like sleeping on the street, again, is illegal. And that can land somebody in jail. And what does that mean? And why, you know, so, yeah. Rosie, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. So you said that there are still 21 states that have slavery in the Constitution. So of the other states who have removed slavery from the Constitution, what was the kind of plan after, and what was their next action steps in terms of, because we're new, and so I think we still have to have conversations and talk to the folks who live in the state, but trying to see what that history looks like, how recent was it, or have there been states who didn't have slavery in their constitution for over 50 years? I don't know.
So we are the first state to remove slavery from the Constitution. There are, because of the history of like Civil War and how slavery was abolished overall, like most of the nation is still covered by the 13th Amendment, which read literally like ours. There shall not be slavery nor involuntary servitude except as punishment for a crime. So there are half of the states never needed that provision because the way the Constitution works, it covers everybody. There are some states that, like, when they were incorporated into the nation, like, they just sidestepped the whole issue. There are other states that, like, have no mention of slavery but have involuntary servitude in their constitution. That's a slightly different battle, right? But we're the first state to actively remove it. So that makes us the folks who have the blueprint. That makes us actually the ones that people will look to us for what is the next step.
that kind of screams like a divestment from like industrial context, that is like prison and working like the prison force, but I want to say labor force, but really they're like slavery, you know. And so I guess that's what it's just this major divestment is what I'm hoping to hear, because I want to see that nationwide. It's fucking bullshit, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Me too.
Cool. Thank you all so much for sharing your knowledge and experience with us. And thank you all for coming. Thank you so much. There won't be a show next month because I'll be in Arizona with my in-laws. But January, we're going to start really already talking about the May election. So be ready because there's stuff for us to do. Thank you all so much.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.